Welcome to Life Planning 101, brought to you by Smart Money Group and Kennedy Financial Services in Eastland, Texas. Tune in every week as we share important information to help you and your family live life on purpose. Insurance, investments, legacy and tax planning, and much more. All covered now on Life Planning 101.
Here we are with another episode of Black and White Market Chatter on Life Planning 101. Matt Irvin, Aaron Kennedy, and Sam Barker with us today. Guys, we've got a lot going on, and Sam nailed it. We were getting all the good stuff out before we even got started, so we thought, well, maybe we ought to record some of this and make sure we got something to talk about. So really exciting stuff today. We'll kind of break down kind of what's going on in the economy, touch on earnings, touch on some yield, gold, Japan. We got a lot to go over, and we'll try to work through all of it. But Aaron, start us off. So you were kind of explaining about GDP, job growth, inflation, kind of the, it's really this, but then they come out and say, nope, just kidding, it's really that. Tell me more about what's happening.
All right, everybody, get your tinfoil hats on. I mean, this is going to sound crazy, but so yesterday, GDP came out and is about half of what it was last quarter and significantly lower than what we were expecting. Is about 1.6% growth, and we were expecting 2.5%. That's not good. That's not good. And the other thing, they floated out our employment problems. You know, we've been told for, this is our fourth year, that employment's great and
right,
it's the best economy ever. But all of a sudden, they're telling us, hey, you know, these really aren't full-time jobs. They're only part-time jobs. And they're your second job.
Right.
And couple of people have come over the border, so
just a handful.
So employment's really not as strong. Why would they float this out? I mean,
yeah,
this is exactly opposite of what they're telling us. And to me, it's like, hey, we need to give every chance for Powell to lower interest rates, because we know that's the steroids, that's the juice, that's what this market is really pricing in.
When you say they, who releases, is that the labor of the Bureau of Labor Statistics?
Yes, yes.
And so the government themselves are coming out and admitting that the job numbers, is it a revision or is it the current report?
No, it's just current, and it's not just them. It's the media actually reporting this stuff. So,
but during COVID, they came out and changed the way they calculated, and I forget which indicator it was, but they said, oh, if we include this, it lags too much. So we're going to just take that out and recalculate how we come up with that number. So it takes away for a little bit of the validity of the data.
Yeah, all the data is so different now than it was. I mean, it's constantly changing. I'm trying to think that, yes, this, we are being told this, so there's a reason that we can lower interest rates. And they kind of smoothed it out a little bit and said, oh, inflation's too high. Well, okay, so that equals out. If inflation's too high, we really can't raise interest rates. So maybe this wasn't any kind of conspiracy or anything like that. But the actual numbers came out today, and voila.
Yeah.
Inflation's fine.
Yeah. Right.
Status quo, we can still lower interest rates by the end of the year. It just doesn't feel right. What is real?
Well, but you got to think, because I read some things about some of the big-time bankers, you know, disagreeing with how rosy things were, and that, you know, wasn't it J.P. Morgan, Jamie Dimon came out and said, if we don't lower rates, we're going to crater. And that was a big deal last time we were on this.
Yes.
And so, you know, what does Jim always say? They all drink from the same bottle or something to that effect. It's like, so how much pressure behind a door are they getting to maybe take a different view at
things? Hey guys, we're addicted to debt. Not just our country, but, you know, the population, our corporations. And when you're carrying this much debt, you have to have lower interest rates.
Right.
I saw something pretty staggering, that the total money supply out there was, what is it, $86 trillion or something like that. And how much debt do we have?
Right.
$35 trillion.
Right, but there was something about, to your point, the money supply, but there was something too about that was actually kind of contrary to what you're saying, but household net worth was like 165.
True. Oh my gosh, yeah. If you do all the assets and the value, it's somewhere around 400 trillion. But so yeah.
But so think about the money creation, right? So if you can borrow against those assets, you're creating more money, right?
Yes.
To flood the system. So it's not just the Fed anymore doing this money creation. Anybody can in some regard.
Yeah. As right? long as you have some kind of
backing,
earnings right. power behind yeah. you, someone's going to take a bet on you until they don't.
and that's the linchpin, right?
And yes. There's the risk of the U.S. dollar. We are the world's currency until we aren't.
And yeah. then, so what replaces the dollar at that point? Aaron and I were talking earlier, and there's not much out there.
There's not a lot. You know, and then that's what's going to keep us safe. You know, we're not going to be safe running to the Japanese yen or the Russian ruble or the euro. You know, we still are the prettiest girl at the dance, and it may be me all by myself yeah. at the yeah. dance.
You look good in a wig, man.
Yes. All I need is a mirror and a wig.
Yeah, that's right.
So talking so much about debt, the yield curve has been inverted for the longest time, I think, in history. It's over 660 days at this point.
Yes.
And so what does that mean? Typically, that a inverted yield curve is a high indicator for recession. So,
Perfect indicator up to this point, yes. right?
I thought that there was one. I don't know. I'm like 12 years old, so I don't know.
I love the question. And honestly, you know, we were talking about this years ago. Not years, you know, 2022. We hit all the requirements for being in a recession. So the only thing that kept us out of this recession was we can't be in a recession with this many jobs and our employment right. figures are too good.
Yeah.
What if all that wasn't real?
Well, and we talked a lot about that yeah. over the last couple of years about, because there's, was it the Philadelphia, anyways, they have some of their own regional indicators of job growth, right? It was like the manufacturing jobs or something. And they came out and said, this highly differentiates from the overall jobs.
Yes.
So this is not the first time we're hearing about this.
No. This is really long in the tooth. And you want to get scared is just go Google layoffs and see all the huge corporations that are laying off people left and right.
Something I heard that was interesting was a lot of kids that have like job offers coming out of college, the companies are actually rescinding those job offers. And so students are staying, maybe going a year of master's or something because they don't have a job anymore at graduation.
Well, and if your education is going to be paid for, if you take a loan out on it, then why not?
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking about going back to school.
Yeah. Easy, fellas. Easy. Positivity here. Let's go.
It's just a crazy world. It's yeah. just a crazy world. And as interesting as it is and entertaining as it is, it's going to be good when we can get to a point where the data that we're getting is, we can trust it again.
Yeah.
And this isn't just Kennedy Financial. It's just across the board is we don't trust the data. Can't look at what's happened now. We need to start looking at what the revision is going to be next month, yeah. and then we'll start pricing off of that.
Yeah, and when you say everybody else, you're talking all the institutional managers, all the people like us out there trying to dissect what's
yes,
going on.
Yes, so absolutely.
It's not just financial advisors. It's way bigger than that. Institutional bankers, hedge yes. fund or pension funds. You know, all of it. So
it is hard to forecast, and forecasting is pretty much the same as being a weatherman. You're never yeah. going to be right. But if the data, well, maybe. Yeah. If the data isn't true, we can forecast more correctly.
Yeah, right. Well, I guess it's just how many standard deviations do we want to hold ourselves accountable
yeah,
to?
Yeah. So. Oh, statistics, yeah. yuck.
Anyways, well, so let's, if we're ready, let's transition into earnings a little bit, right? We're mid-earnings season.
Yeah,
So there's a lot going on with earnings. Some rosy, some not stuff. As rosy, right?
Yeah, this was a fantastic week to learn about the market. Three of the big Magnificent Seven companies came out. We're talking Facebook or Meta, Google, and Tesla. Meta came out and they smoked it. You know, they beat their earnings, they beat their revenues. They did fantastic. But they came out and said, you know what? Well, the future is not as bright as we thought. So next quarter earnings or the quarter after that is going to be a little bit weaker than what we imagined. And boy, they got punished for it. I mean, on the week, just on the week, they're down 8%. And I believe they were down like 12% the day that they were they announced that. So one thing I want everybody to remember is we don't care about what happened today. Today's already happened and it's gone. We're always looking into the future. So we know Meta looking in the future was a big drop. Turn around and look at Tesla. They didn't grow as fast as they were supposed to. The revenues came in really weak, a lot weaker than we thought. But they said, hey, the future's bright. We're going to do better on our next call. And boom.
They popped.
Yeah, they're up double digits, you know, up 13% for the week. And they didn't perform as well, but they gave us hope. So,
well, but when we think about the exponential growth those particular companies have had, I mean, it was, what was it, 2023 that the Mag 7 was all that rose.
Yeah,
you know, technology
that was the market.
It was 55% or whatever that statistic was. So to realistically believe that they could continue to grow at that multiple is crazy. So it's nice to hear them say, hey, we're going to continue to grow, but not the exponential rate. So instead of kind of being okay with that, the greedy American public who's investing in only tech stocks.
And have we talked about that? I mean, that's the law of large numbers. Surely, if Microsoft or Apple, they continue to grow at this pace, eventually they're going to be the only thing on the planet. And, you know, how can that go on? But they've been doing that for a long time. Just, I was looking at numbers today. If you take the entire Japanese stock market, it's worth a little bit greater than $6 trillion. And you look at Microsoft and Apple, and they're a little bit north of $5 trillion. So that entire country is smaller than two U.S. companies.
Yeah, right at it, yeah.
Two U.S. companies, which is just mind-boggling. And you know what? If those two companies continue to have the growth and Japan stops growing, then they're going to be bigger.
Speaking of Japan really quick, so they've had I'm not going to say historic because they've done this before, but it's been a long time, a really good run up. Now, that's mostly regulation, right?
Yes.
So a good regulatory environment for the stock market, or at least for investors, is that going to be growth, or is that considered, you know, how would you look at that? Is that a growth of the market, or what would that be considered?
Structural change. It's funny that you bring that up. I'm going to change the subject for just for a second. My daughter came into town, and she was in this class, and it's an honors class, and it's more of a discussion type of thing, and her topic was she had to watch Howard the Duck, and I don't even know why I brought that up. I sincerely doubt either one of y'all have ever seen that movie.
Nope.
But anyways, anyways, I mean, it was a flop at the box office. But watching that show, you know, there was so many Japanese references in there. There's a scene where they're at a cafe and everybody's wearing the headbands and it's a sushi place. And I was trying to explain to Jillian how hot Japan was back in the late 80s. Everything was Japanese. You know, that was the strongest country and economy that we'd ever seen. And I think it was like 87 where they hit their peak. It cratered, and it just got back to their 1987 peak this year.
Yeah,
this year. How long is that?
Yeah,
that's absolutely insane.
But if it's a structural change, that's more of a repricing than growth.
Yeah. Well, right? Yes and no. Yeah, okay. I think you can look at it either way. Number one, the Japan economy has always been very export. You know,
okay.
You're going to be selling your stuff overseas. So in order to grow their economy, they keep making their currency cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. So their goods continue to be cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. And because of this, you know, it's kind of in a deflationary economy. So the people of Japan are big-time savers. Big-time savers. Mm-hmm. They're not investors. They put it in their bank account, and they're expecting all their goods and services to go down in value, and that is their return.
Mm.
So Japanese companies do the same thing. They sit on a bunch of cash. All of their extra earnings just sit there in, no, I guess not cash, yen, yeah. Japanese cash. Well, rules came out and changed, and they said, hey, if you want to be part of the index, like the Japanese version of the S&P 500, you got to be pricing above book value. So book value is you take all of your assets and see what they're worth, mm-hmm. and all of the stocks by the times the stock price has to be greater than that if you want to be on the exchange. Now, one way to do that is to grow. Yeah. And you just tell somebody to grow, it's very hard to do.
We told Sam that a
couple of times. I was going to make the same joke, but no.
5 foot nothing.
Yeah. Well, it's that 12 to 20 something that we had to make you grow up overnight.
Yeah. But the other way to do it, to get above book value, is get rid of your cash. And they're all very flush with cash. So we're seeing these Japanese companies that have been growing great, but now they're going to start paying dividends. They're going to start buying back their own shares of stock, just like U.S. companies.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to be a monumental breakthrough. Kind of think about Japanese companies the way they were doing it. It was basically simple interest. Hey, this company makes 35%. We're going to drop it in cash, and that's never going to grow again. And we're going to start over the next year. So it just keeps devaluing and keeps devaluing. And that's changed. Absolutely changed. One of our holdings, I think, our Japanese holdings, not one of them, it's up about 57% over the last year. It's up over 20% this year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the biggest fears that we've had, it's not a big fear, but they're going to start increasing the interest rate on the yen. Because if they start increasing the yen, or the interest on the yen, more people will buy it for that yield, and the yield, the currency will increase in value. Well, they came out today or last night, whenever it was, and said, nope, we're keeping interest rates the same.
There you go.
So, boom, had a pretty big day in Japan, up like 2% or so today. So
for everybody who doesn't know what that duck reference was, The Karate Kid came out in 1984, so that everybody knows kind of the time frame and what to expect from the movie industry.
There you go. That's another one.
That's the only one. Nobody else knows any movies from the 80s.
You watch any movie from the 80s, and there's Japanese references. Howard the Duck, Golden Child. Next week, I'm going to bring you every movie that has some kind of Japanese reference.
I'll watch Karate Kid.
That's another big one. God, it's just so difficult. I am actually having a podcast with people my kids' age.
We did graduate together.
Anyways, Japan's big, and we've been an investor there. We've been excited about our holdings in Japan, and they've done really well, and we really expect it to continue going. And it's not so much the growth that we're excited about. Japan has traditionally been highly correlated with the yield on the 10-year bond. So if interest rates go up, usually that's not good for our markets, and they go down, but our Japanese holdings do the opposite. So it is a fantastic piece to have in the portfolio for diversification, and hopefully it gets to be a lot bigger piece.
Yep.
From growth.
Yep.
That's pretty exciting stuff. So anything else you want to cover on earnings before we kind of switch into, I think you had some great points on yields versus treasuries and yes. Yields in the market. So.
One last thing, and if y'all want to dig into this is fine. We were talking about how well Japan's done in our portfolio. Another big mover that a lot of people don't know of is gold.
Yes.
Gold has moved about 13% this year. So 2024, and it's up about 17% over the last year. And that's kind of a head scratcher too. And if nobody's taken off their tinfoil hat, Why is our markets doing so good on one side where gold is doing good on the other? That is a bunker asset that usually does really well at the worst of times.
Right. But so, but you kind of, you know, I think about it from a little bit different perspective, right? You guys are definitely into the data, and I'm more into theory of, so there's a lot of division in people in the country, and you're seeing that division widen. It's one way versus the other. So not a lot of people are middle of the road. They either think this country's going to crater if we don't change administration, or they think that the tech growth will never, ever stop, right? We had all those meme stocks and everything, people losing their homes over trying to bet on options. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's very... it's kind of scary and sad in some ways that people are so hung on that bias to say it's going to continue forever. But there's not a lot of middle of the road, and we saw that, right? In 23, when you look at those the sector earnings, the only thing that did well in 23 was the tech. You know, the healthcare lagged, utilities lagged, staples lagged. 24, right, we're seeing a little bit more all boats rising, you know, to some sense. But now you're saying, too, you know, gold is that retreat asset,
yes,
right? So that's booming. And then we still have this today. I think, you know, the market's been a little tough over the last couple of weeks compared to what we felt year to date. But then today we see that kind of turn. So
yeah,
would you agree with that, or no, what are your thoughts there?
100%. You know, I've heard people say gold is an inflation. Gold is for black swan. You know, and if you try to put it into a bucket, usually it's going to fail for you. But where I see it the most valuable is gold is a currency.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Gold is a currency that has been used since the beginning of time. And why does it make sense as a bunker asset is, you know, we always tease about this,
right.
But if it's the end of times.
Right. The store of value, you know, right?
I'm going to carry around this 40-ton block of gold to make all my purchases.
And your Bowie knife to fleck off, you know,
yes,
scrape off flecks. I think Sam does that when he buys diapers, right?
Yeah, he's burning through a lot of gold right now.
Yeah.
There's not enough gold.
Yeah.
But it does kind of make sense if you're saying, hey, equity markets are doing really good, but why is gold doing the same thing? And maybe it's people are starting to say, maybe the U.S. dollar, I need to start protecting U.S. dollar a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's 100% of my portfolio. It's 100% of my way of life. Maybe with all this printing, maybe I need to hedge the U.S. dollar a little bit. And I think people are looking at that. Or could simply be just China's buying a whole lot of gold right now. And
wow.
That's the end of the story. And that is true. China is buying a tremendous amount of gold. But surely they're not the only story in town.
No, but so touch on that just briefly. So why would that be important to them to buy so much? Or why any foreign country? Is that because they hold so much of our debt and they want to make sure they don't get left with, you know, holding the bag?
Absolutely. You know, foreign countries want to have a portfolio of currencies in their treasury. You know, if it's the Chinese yuan, they want things in their on their balance sheet that they can sell to trade or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, what happens if they want to use the U.S. dollar? They want dollars. You know, if they want to trade in Europe, they want euros. And I know of something really big that just came out is China and Russia just signed an agreement that all of their oil transactions were going to be in each other's currencies.
Mm.
So that reduces the amount of dollars that they need on their balance sheet. And what do they do with that? If they're selling their dollars, why not put it in gold?
Yep.
It's a safe haven asset, and it is a currency on the last day of the earth.
I could see them being a little bunker-esque as well. I mean,
yeah.
Especially if their partners in crime, Russia, really
yes.
do it there. Yeah. Anyway, that's not about this. But But that's super interesting. And, you know, and two, I know we're not necessarily touching on it largely today, but something I found interesting was you talked about, you know, currency, and there's a lot of talk about stable coins and bitcoins and all that. But the thing I thought so interesting was you know, you're talking about, you know, global currency, where I heard something interesting the other day where, like, somewhere like Argentina, whose inflation is through the roof, you know, they can't buy a gallon of milk for the same price 5 minutes apart, where they're, you know, they don't have bank access, but they have cell phone access, which gives them access to these digital wallets and stable coins and stuff. So they can actually bring some stability to their stuff. So, you know, I think that's super interesting.
Yes, it is. And I can't remember who I was talking to, but you think of a country that has hyperinflation, you know, 50-60% inflation, and we've seen that recently in South America. Do you think that they cared that Bitcoin dropped 50%?
They probably didn't feel it.
I mean, yeah, they cared. Don't get me wrong, but it didn't affect them like it did us. Because if we'd have priced Bitcoin in U.S. dollars, that hurt, you know. But if we priced it in Argentinian money, there wasn't that bad of a drop,
right?
You know, so.
It's super interesting to see how it relates back to the rest of the world, because, you know, we get, and I'm just as guilty, right? We get caught up in what we see, and what we're blasted with is so much domestic garbage on the news that you kind of get caught up in that. So
we forget about the rest of the world.
Yeah. So something else I heard that was, I don't know if you ever heard Ian Bremmer speak. He's a geopolitical expert.
Yes.
And so he's awesome. I really like to listen to him. But one of the things he says, the best thing you can do is watch an hour's worth of English-speaking international news. So like Germany, you know, if they come out and do an English coverage of what's going on in America, because it's not biased by any station. And then so you get the outside in, because you can't see the picture from inside the frame, right?
No.
So you get outside that frame and look into what's happening. So it was kind of an interesting perspective. So I thought that was quite interesting.
100%. I can't remember... you know, we cut the cord and we were bouncing around from one
streamer
to the next. And I was on one, and I think the only financial channel I had in the mornings was Bloomberg. And people that work there in the morning are not from here.
Yeah.
You know, right. So listening to them laugh at what was going on in America and seeing their perspective of what was going on, it was shocking.
Yeah.
It was absolutely shocking. And being from England or whatever is like, you're in a worse shape, but they...
It's a little bit comic, right? Yeah. Some of the ridiculousness that happens domestically. Yeah. I mean, it's...
Look at what they're doing to themselves.
Right, yeah. If we only knew. So, awesome. So what else? So we went the earnings, yields, gold, Japan, the economy. Is there anything else you want to cover today before we get wrapped up?
You know, we're right in the middle of earnings. Had three big ones this week on the Magnificent Seven. We had several of our companies in our quality growth report this week, and they pretty much across the board, they knocked it out of the park. I think our defense companies, Lockheed and Northrop, they're both up over 8% over what we were expecting. Novartis beat earnings by about 7%, Microsoft at almost 6, Google at 2.5. So our companies really, really, really performed. The only one that had real negative earnings was S&P Global, but we were kind of expecting that. And it's all worked out. And the companies have done great this week from a stock price appreciation. So we're having a lot of fun seeing what's moving and what's not. Companies are growing. Most of the earnings we're seeing are beating what they were supposed to do. So next week's going to be another one for the Magnificent Seven, and it's going to paint a clearer picture of what's going on and how AI is really affecting things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably not going to be so much this quarter, but I'm expecting next quarter and the quarter after that, we're really going to see those pop up in the earnings report and start to see the material changes in how these companies how their operations are happening from AI. So
awesome.
Touching base exciting. Really quick on that. We were talking earlier about what that looks like. If AI gets implemented, that's going to increase their ability to either grow or expand margins. But how do they do that? Is it mostly layoffs, or is that going to be efficiencies elsewhere? What does that look like, do you think?
Yes and yes. How political of an answer was that? We've talked about this.
Are you running for something this year, Aaron?
AI is going to take over a lot of jobs. Anybody that's setting schedules or making phone calls or writing reports, that can all be done with AI.
Well, they're, you know, most of the articles you read nowadays are probably not written by a human.
Well, and they're saying that, right? Yeah. You know, partially generated, or there's a certain disclosure they're putting on there, but it's still right in your face. And how often do you read the fine print, right?
Yeah, so would you even know? Does. But even if they don't, they're not laying off people. You know, you have people that would take 2 weeks, 3 weeks to write out this report. Now they're writing it out in 2 to 3 days because of the help of AI. So, yes, efficiency is going to go through the roof. Research time is going to be cut.
So to your
90%.
To your point, so people are putting in, you know, 30, 40, 50 page reports and saying, spit me out the Cliff Notes version.
Yes.
So not even creating the reports, but also dissecting the reports.
Yes.
Well, and something I did this past weekend or the weekend before, I took ChatGPT and I took kind of a theory of an investment strategy or a trading strategy, and I told ChatGPT to build a trading strategy or code a trading strategy and to show me the results of it in a graph. Now, it took a few iterations and some adjustments, but all it is typing out, I want to see this instead of this. Mm-hmm. And then it will rewrite the code. And then once you get it all formulated the way that the coding program wants, it will work. And I did that in a couple hours, and I've never coded in my life. I just had
that. I love that you brought that up, because at that particular conference we went to, they were talking about one of the biggest risks. Like, what's one of the biggest job sectors at risk? Software programming.
Yep. Yeah.
Because that made you, a non-programmer, the ability to use different technology. All of a sudden, you're a genius, right? Programming software.
Yeah. Y'all all heard that.
Yeah. What is the name of you the never top heard that before, programmer or something like that? Yeah. I can't remember what the very top, but they're not needed.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I mean, and that sounds horrible. I don't want to be upset, but the computer can do it for you now.
Yeah.
Well, and to that point, there's no sense in getting upset. It's like you got to be forward thinking to see how can I pivot into an expensive role, because
the theory is
that AI is not going to replace humans, but humans with AI will.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
So humans leveraging AI technology will run it. So I'm going to kind of put you guys on the spot here just a little bit, because, you know, earlier in the year we talked about some of the theories that we're going to, you know, themes, if you will, that are going to take place this year. We talked about, you know, international wars, talked about elections, and we talked about AI. So with that, are we still seeing those be the majority themes? Is there anything else that's kind of surfacing now that we're through the first quarter and partially through the second?
No, I would say that POW. But
Powell's the whole thing by himself.
Yeah. Inflation, what does that look like? Lots of stuff on Ukraine and
You hear a lot about
World
Israel,
War III.
Yes, yeah. There's so, a lot of fear out there.
I think it was World War II, correct me if I'm wrong, that kind of put the U.S. dollar on top. And so, you know, am I right? Was it World War II?
World War II, I'm pretty sure it was the agreement with Saudi Arabia on selling oil, which
in
was
US
just
dollars.
A little bit later than that.
Close enough for
me.
But to your point, the U.S. made significant investments overseas, and yes, the dollar did strengthen a lot. You're right there.
And so outside of, from a finance standpoint, not considering the expense of human life and the real tragedy, but Well, and it's a real tinfoil hat to think that we're going into World War III. I think at this point we've been much closer, I think, historically than we are now. Yes. But you see it all over as fast as information flows nowadays. So
yeah, it's a scary time. And that should, I don't even feel like a good human being. But, you know, there's always a reason not to invest. And, you know, we get those charts for marketing, and it shows every war and every single little conflict, and it's not little, you know. But just thinking back to those times and thinking how you were feeling, you know, you sure didn't want to be in the market. And, you know, it's a different kind of mindset. Is, you know, we're not in the market to make money. You've got to think we're investing in our future. We're investing in our race.
Yep.
You know, and as Homo sapiens.
Yeah, right. Go Elon.
Yeah. So, you know, it's not our civilization is going to continue to expand whether we're at war or not. You know, we want greater things for our kids, whether there's inflation or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the human race will march forward. And that's what we got to remember. No matter how bleak things look, that's the most important thing. The human race will continue on.
Yep. I think we all agree
until
with that.
Until it doesn't.
That's awesome. Yeah. Until it doesn't.
So one last thing before we break up here, because you know, we talk a lot about information and sources, but what's some things that people can watch or look for or maybe read? Is there anything specific that you kind of say would align with what we're looking at? If people want to know a little bit more information, maybe study some of the topics that we're talking about. Do you guys have any resources that you go to that might be helpful for people? Forgive the head scratch. I know it's a little bit impromptu.
Well, so. You know, it depends on how really deep you want to get into it. I know before I started here, you know, Buffett reads annual reports every day. And so I'd start picking up annual reports and I'd get into it. And they can be so many pages of jargon that I'm not used to. And so it really depends on how deep you want to get into it. But I really enjoy the footnotes of the financial statements on those annual reports.
Of each company.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So some companies that you're interested in, they publish these reports and they have the earnings mm-hmm. calls. And I think, do you even have to own stock anymore to get on the earnings
no.
calls? Like
no,
you,
no, no.
It's all public out no. there. So, you know, if people are wanting to know, and they actually talk about good things on there, some of the forward thinking, some of the projects, obviously only public stuff, right? They're not
yep.
going to give you the boardroom minutes of the behind the scenes, but it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, and you know, I've learned so much just from listening to different Bitcoin podcasts, and this is not a pitch for Bitcoin whatsoever, but a lot of the reasons that they've talked about of why this was created
mm-hmm.
and what's going on today, you get to learn about inflation, you get to learn about currency. You get to learn about deflation, how humans act in different environments all over something that really doesn't make a lot of sense to people. But the education out there is not just on some crazy electric coin.
Yeah.
You know, there is good education on dang near everything about our economy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just taking a different viewpoint. And that's been really powerful.
Yeah.
So I've loved that aspect.
Yeah, that's awesome. Listening to perspective that's not your own. You know,
yes.
get outside your shell,
yes.
get outside your bubble. That's pretty awesome. So,
and it's okay. Accessible. You know, you can access anything that you want. It's just too much information to take in. So those podcasts, going back to Aaron, you know, the young one over there just bringing up the new technology of podcasts. I think that's great. And he sends me something every week. So those are huge.
Yeah, pretty interesting stuff. Well, gentlemen, I thank you for today. We went a little longer, but I hope everybody enjoyed our podcast. Today's packed full of information. We're going to be back with you here soon to bring you some more information on some of the companies that we're looking at and keep you informed on what's going on in the economy. And Sam will bring some sort of child's TV show up to your
bad
attention.
Jokes.
So,
bad jokes.
Yeah, no, it's good.
Grow.
we're trying to get, yeah, Sam's got a baby on the way, so we're trying to suck all of his brain cells before he goes into comatose mode as a zombie changing diapers. So all good stuff, but we're happy, and thank you guys for your time. Appreciate it. As our listeners, we appreciate you and your faith in us as we navigate these waters, and just thank you so very much. I hope everybody has an excellent day, and appreciate you here on Black and White Market Chatter on Life Planning 101.
Thank you for joining us for Life Planning 101, brought to you by Smart Money Group and Kennedy Financial Services. If you have questions, you can email them to lifeplanning@kennedy-financial.com. Don't forget to learn how our sister company can assist you with all of your tax, bookkeeping, and consulting needs. You can find out more at briscoeandassociates.com. Be sure to tune in next week for more Life Planning 101. The opinions expressed herein are those of the firm and are subject to change without notice. The opinions referenced are as of the date of publication and are subject to change due to changes in the market or economic conditions and may not necessarily come to pass. Any opinions, projections, or forward-looking statements expressed herein are solely those of the author, may differ from the views or opinions expressed by other areas of the firm, and are only for general informational purposes as of the date indicated. Securities offered through Calton & Associates Incorporated, a registered investment advisor, member of FINRA SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Smart Money Group LLC. Kennedy Financial Services and Smart Money Group LLC are separate entities and are not owned or controlled by Calton & Associates Incorporated.